The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you on the programme until 12 noon today. Lots to get through, lots to talk about. We've got some competitions as well, giving you the chance to win some lovely goodies, confectionery-wise, and also giving you the chance to win yourself a nice spa treatment and a bit of pampering. All that's coming up. And of course, the most important thing of all is over the course of this programme, we want you to give us your perspectives on the stories of the day. What do you believe are the most important issues to be talked about? You can call us on 0749125000, 00353749125000 if you're outside of the dialing area. You can text or WhatsApp us, of course, on 086 60 25000. You can contact us via email, comments at highlandradio.com. We're also available through social media. It's at Highland Hub on X. It's at Highland Radio on X, and it's Highland Hub on Facebook, I think. And then we're also obviously available through our YouTube channel, where you can watch the programme unfold as well. Looking at the newspapers this morning, an interesting sort of top farming headline on the Irish Independent: Kerrygold stockpiles butter for the US in case of Trump tariffs. That's in the farming put out of the Irish Independent. And it's amazing, with the prospect of a Trump presidency coming back into effect in the US in the new year. A lot of people looking to see what are the business implications of that going to be on Ireland and the Irish economy. Girl 8 killed at home trying to intervene in row before stabbing. A girl who was stabbed had tried to attempt to intervene in a row between two adults. It's understood that Malika Al-Khatib was awoken by a commotion and tried to intervene. Looking at the Irish Times this morning, and it's interesting, all the papers looking at now the general election results and where things are going to go in terms of where the results sit at the moment. And the Irish Times is saying Fine Gael will insist on parity of esteem in any new coalition talks. Now, that's an interesting one, because there had been some discussion at the potential for a Fianna Fáil-led government that didn't have a rotating Taoiseach. Now, Fine Gael seemed to be making it absolutely abundantly clear that from their point of view, they will be insisting on a rotating Taoiseach, and they will not accept a situation where Fianna Fáil retain the Taoiseach's position for the entirety of the government. So Fianna Fáil are playing down any talk of future deal making. In the meantime, Sinn Féin is approaching the Social Democrats and Labour. Now, on the Irish Independent, just going back to that for a moment, the front page there is Labour TD's split over talks on coalition with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And the split seems to be going down. Ivana Bacik is being strongly urged by some to ignore attempts by Micheál Martin and Simon Harris to bring the Labour Party into a coalition. However, others, such as Alan Kelly, are insisting the party should return to government and have a moral responsibility to do so. Now, it's interesting that Alan Kelly is one of the ones that's pushing this, because if you recall, at the time of the discussion over housing charges and water charges and the bringing in of the property tax, and there was so much focus on water charges, Alan Kelly was the Environment Minister at the time when the water charges were being posited and being brought in. And he was the minister in charge of the department, and he was very much the person that was taking a lot of that in the neck. So no one knows more than Alan Kelly what it's like to be a minister in an unpopular department at a time when an unpopular measure is being put forward. And he took an awful lot of flack at the time, and he's still advocating that the party go into government. A very emotional interview actually with them last night after his election was confirmed. Now, that was partly down to the fact that unfortunately his father is very ill in hospital at the moment, and I think that obviously was affecting him emotionally too. And obviously, irrespective of politics and everything else, your thoughts are with him in that context. But no, Kelly, one of those who are saying Labour should become involved in coalition talks. Obviously, Sinn Féin trying to bring in Labour and the Social Democrats and other left-leaning parties. Now, that's going to be a very difficult one, because even if you take it, Sinn Féin, on what is it, 36 at the moment, or is it 36 or 38? And the Progressive, the Social Democrats and the Labour Party on 11 each. So if it's 38 plus 22, you're now moving into about 60. So you're still trying to make up another 28 at least before you're going to get it looks very difficult to see how you're going to get any kind of a stable government out of that. However, it's only going to start, and believe you me, if the talk about who's going to form the next government has finished by January, I think we'll be doing quite well. Think back to the time as COVID was hitting, we'd had an election, 2-3 weeks before COVID hit, and it was well into the early summer before we got a government, and we had the strange situation where we had a caretaker government in place, where the Minister for Social Protection, who was administering things like the pandemic unemployment payment, had lost her seat and wasn't actually a TD, but was still the minister for that couple of months. It won't take quite as long this time, because as we said in previous discussions and over the weekend, the template for a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael coalition is there now. So we're in the situation where it has been discussed. It does make a certain amount of sense. It has been it is a tried and tested model, so to speak. So the template is there, and it may very well be on the cards. Now, Irish Daily Mail this morning, the main story there is girl died trying to save mother in home stabbing. An 8-year-old girl was stabbed to death as she tried to protect her mother from an assault in her own home. It happened in New Ross in County Wexford shortly before midnight on Sunday night. The chief suspect in the case is a man known to the girl and her mother. The man, who was understood to be originally from Kuwait, we're told, suffered self-inflicted injuries and is also under treatment in hospital and is under armed guard. And inside, the Irish Daily Mail have an exclusive on the front page. Come and get me. Michael Lowry offers his support at a price as independent TDs set out demands to support new coalition. And you can be absolutely assured we'll have an awful lot of discussions along those lines over the coming weeks, as we said. Let's move over toward the Irish Daily Star. Girl 8 killed protecting her mum. That's the same headline there in the Irish Daily Star. Tragic child stabbed twice at her home as she tried to stop attacker. Looking in, and there's a story that I have to say has saddened me, because it's a man who I would have watched on TV an awful lot many years ago. Soap icon Ian Smith, he played Harold Bishop in Neighbours, has revealed he has a terminal cancer. It's a very aggressive, non-fixable cancer. It's a pulmonary pleomorphic carcinoma, which means he's had one bout of a new immunotherapy treatment plus chemotherapy. But the 8-year-old says he had to act as a guinea pig. He doesn't want to die. He wants to stay alive as long as he can. But he believes that he is going to die soon. He was speaking on Australia's 10 News First. So, I mean, Harold Bishop was one of those iconic characters in Neighbours. And I, like many people, I watched Neighbours religiously when it started. And over the years, interest waned. And now I could sit down in front of Neighbours, I suspect, and be watching it for 20 minutes and not know it was Neighbours until I would suddenly recognise the bridge beside the cafe or something, which actually did happen once before. I saw something on TV, it looked very vaguely familiar, and it struck me, oh yeah, that's the bridge beside Paul's cafe. I think Paul was the name of the guy that ran the cafe, wasn't it? He was Jim's son, and I've forgotten the surname. No, they were the Ramseys. Well, yeah, it would have been Paul Ramsey and Jim Ramsey. That's what it was. Again, an awful lot more inside the Star, as is in all the papers, about that horrendous stabbing in New Ross. Monks, a TD, Brew Ha Ha, a picture of Jerry Hutch and his brother Patsy taking down election posters and having a cup of tea and a sandwich. That's the front of the Daily Mirror. Ruud van Nistelrooy, it hurt to leave United. That's Ruud van Nistelrooy, who was a caretaker manager with Man United for a couple of weeks there. Now appointed boss of Leicester City. And it'll be interesting to see what happens when Ruud van Nistelrooy goes back to Old Trafford trying to defeat his former team. So that's the back of the Irish Daily Mirror. Irish Sun this morning. Garda is shot by accident. And this is a story by Stephen Breen. A Garda is being treated in hospital after he sustained a gunshot wound during a training exercise. His leg was hurt after an accidental discharge during practice with the Army Ranger Wing at Kildare's Curragh Camp. The officer, believed to have a fractured leg, is being treated in hospital in Talla. Inside also, an interesting story that we're going to be discussing a little bit later. Taxi hike unfair on hospitality. The new taxi fares hike will harm the late night economy and also impact on hospitality workers who rely on Lyft's home. The 9% increase has been announced by the National Transport Authority. It comes into effect on Sunday. It includes a special rate now being applied to peak weekend hours all year round. That rate previously only applied between 8pm on Christmas Eve and 8am on Stephen's Day, between 8pm on New Year's Eve to 8am on New Year's Day. And the pre-booking charge will also increase now from 2 to 3 euro. And as I say, we will be discussing that a little bit later on the programme. It is, as we said, Tuesday. It's the 3rd of December. And it's funny, it only struck me yesterday that with all the election coverage and so on over the course of the weekend, it never actually struck me that we were into December. So it is the 3rd of December, and someone was talking about, you know, I think actually over the weekend at one point, someone said, oh, we might get at this kind of Christmas. And Greg said, God, that's so far away. And then suddenly struck him, no, hang on, Christmas is what? The guts are 3 weeks away at this stage. So, it's the 3rd of December, it's Tuesday. This is the 9 till noon show, and as I said, if you want to make contact with us, you can text us 086 60 25000. That number good for WhatsApp messages as well. You can call us on 074 91 25000. Also on the programme this morning, you can of course use social media. It's on Facebook and X. You can watch us on our YouTube, our Facebook pages, and on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland on YouTube. You can watch the show unfold live, and many people do, and to all of those who do, a very warm welcome to you on the programme this morning. In the preamble to the programme this morning, we promised you a few competitions, and let's look at the first of those competitions now. And Cadbury is a company that you will always associate with Christmas, and let's be honest, it wouldn't be a Christmas without a selection box under the tree. And people say, I'm sure, and the reason I'm sure is I've already bought it myself, just to be sure, but Cadbury have a very special campaign running at the moment, and it's a campaign whereby you can provide someone you love, someone you want to say thank you to, with a special present. And there's little posters going up all over, and the posters are basically saying you can send a Cadbury bar for free. And it's actually their Secret Santa. It's year 7 of the campaign. They have 22,000 chocolate bars to give away, and they also have two huge hampers of chocolate plus a 50 voucher daily to be won. What they want you to do is to tell us who you want to surprise with something special with a Secret Santa bar this year, and why do they deserve it? What good reason do you have to surprise someone? Tell us about that person in your life who deserves a Secret Santa bar this year. You could win 50 euro, also be in the draw to win that Cadbury hamper for you and your Secret Santa. There's a hamper for you and for the person that you're nominating. And with thanks to Cadbury Secret Santa, don't forget, if you want to send a bar to someone in secret, look out for the special posters all around the country. You can text or WhatsApp us with your letters to 086 60 25000. Now, we have the letter to read, the letter for Monday. And the nominee is Caroline Doherty. Caroline Doherty, Shivy, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, is my friend and neighbour. She's kind and selfless and always willing to lend a hand in times of need. Caroline is a doula and is a wealth of knowledge. She's helped myself and many others, I'm sure, during my pregnancies and in my postpartum period. My children are now 8, 6 and 2, and she is still there for help and advice. I never know how to thank her for her continuous helping hand, and I think she would absolutely deserve a Secret Santa hamper. Thank you, Caroline, for all you do. And that's from Sarah and family on the Rock. So Sarah gets a 50 euro voucher. Caroline gets a voucher as well, and as well as the Secret Santa bar, and both are in the draw for that hamper at the end of the week. And that's with thanks to Cadbury and the Secret Santa promotion that is ongoing at the moment. And there'll be more on that, obviously, over the course of the programme. So if you have a nominee, if you want to send us a letter telling us who you would like to receive that Secret Santa bar, you can do so. Send your nominees via text or WhatsApp, 086 60 25,000. And we have a few coming in here. We've got Mary says, I'd like to nominate my granddaughter for Secret Santa. She's 6 years old and always trying to help and make people happy. She saves up anything she gets. She does shoeboxes with her own stuff and is always looking to help people less well off, like Mary's meals. And for someone her age, she is truly remarkable. And her name is Isla, and she lives in Milford. And that's from Mary. And fair play to you, Isla. That's just one of the nominations that's been coming in today. And please send in yours, as we said, 086 60 25,000. Of course, there's been a lot of discussion in recent times too over home helps. And one caller says, my mother home helps. They go above their means. I have them 3 times a day for them. I would never manage, and what a beautiful gift it would be. They all love chocolate. My mother shares hers with them, and they all love a wee square. And that's from Deirdre in Creasla, who would like to nominate the home helps to come and help her mother. And having been in a situation where both my parents, while they were still with us, required home helps. What a wonderful, wonderful service, and what wonderful, wonderful people. And we certainly would have been absolutely lost without them. So I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with everything you've said there about the importance of home helps, Deirdre. And thank you very much indeed. Good morning. I'm a wife and full-time carer of my 60-year-old husband who developed a degenerative disease in his mid-50s. I see him losing a lot of what people take for granted: walking, memory, dexterity, swallow, freedom from pain, movement. He carried his illness with a bravery that I couldn't imagine. No matter if we have a good day or a bad day, we always end our evening with a pot of tea and a bar of chocolate each. And I would love to nominate him for the hamper. And that's from Jackie. And Jackie, thank you indeed for that text. And as we said, if you would like to offer us your nominees, please do so. 086 60 25,000 for text or WhatsApp messages. Now, we are going to go to line one, because we're going to speak to Mark Ford over Unauthorised Providers Unit within the Central Bank. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
So, I'm very well indeed. Thank you very much indeed. Mark, we hear so much recently about scamming. Now, scams have always been with us. But, I mean, we've gone from the times when you might get a letter from a Nigerian prince and they might be so obvious that you would spot a scam from 100 yards and it became a joke. You've won in the Spanish lottery. I am a Spanish prince and I've got loads of money tied up in an account, and can I just leave the money in your account for a year and I'll give you 2 million. We've had those with us for years, but we could see them coming a mile away. These days, scams are becoming really, really sophisticated, and that's a worry.
Very much so. You're very right. We're seeing a huge shift in the type of scams we're seeing, particularly now in the online space. And you're right, they're very sophisticated. They're really hard to spot. Like, you know, they've caught out people in, you know, the financial space who provide advice. They've even caught them out. It's been that sophisticated. It's very hard to spot and track. You know, so in the last couple of years, like, we've seen a huge rise in this. It poses a huge risk to everybody. Scammers don't pick and choose who they go after. They go after everyone. So nobody's as safe or immune from it. Like ourselves here in the Central Bank, since 2022, we've seen a 75% increase in the number of reports and complaints in relation to scams. We're seeing a particular type of investment scam in the last 2 years, very sophisticated. We've seen it about 60, 70 times. They're using, you know, fake investment brochures, advertising, you know, really good rates on these investments. The brochures look real, authentic. They use the logos from different banks and investment firms. They talk about how safe your money is, and they reach out to people. And we've seen, you know, from the reports we've received, Donal, we've seen more than 250 people impacted by this, and with losses up on 7-8 million. You know, so it's really targeting people, you know, pensioners who've got pension pots when they just retire, people who get inheritance, you know, from family members and that sort of thing, where you've got some money to invest. They're targeting people at this time of the year. We see a lot of advanced fee fraud scams. So people who are looking for some, you know, short-term loans to cover Christmas, to cover some of the utility bills, you know, for, you know, emergency loans for things like, you know, your car is broken down and that. People go online looking for loans for those. And what we're finding is that you'll definitely come across scam advertisements and websites for those type of loan scams. And the big one there to spot is if they're asking for a fee up front before they give you your money, that's the biggest red flag for us when we see that.
One of the worrying things too is previously, if you got a text from a scammer, it came from a 15, 16 digit number that was obviously an international number. Now, in some cases, we're hearing that texts are coming and they appear to come from your bank as far as the number and the title that appears on the screen is concerned. It's, you know, it really does look genuine, and sometimes it appears to be the correct number that's showing up on your screen.
Very much so. And they're even getting to the point where you get, you normally get your messages from your bank, let's say, and they input the scam text within the body of the text you've received from your actual genuine bank. So it's really hard to spot. The one thing we'd say there to people is, take your time whenever you get messages from anybody, whether it's phone calls, emails, text messages. The one thing is to take your time, you know, step back, think about it, read it, make sure you understand what's been asked. The big thing, but then, is anybody asks you to provide your password, click on a link that comes in a text message, provide passwords, that's a big red flag. We shouldn't click on anything that comes in through a text message. You know, banks that we deal with will not be asking you to provide your details, looking for your passcodes, looking for personal information in those text messages. So that's the big red flag. People need to stop and think and just not be acting on that. If you're actually concerned and wondering, is it a real issue? Step back, ring your bank separately on the number you know, go into your branch, ask them the question, could even show them the text message, to make sure, I got this message. I'm not sure if it's real or not, or what do I should do with it. And they'll clearly tell you that that's a scam, and just take your time and not be actioning those things.
I know too that the Banking and Payments Federation have launched an app this week in which you can actually put, if you get a message, be it from an email or from a phone number, you can actually input the details and they'll tell you whether it's genuine or not. Now, I know that's more geared perhaps toward online shopping than it is toward purported messages coming from banks, but important that all resources like that are utilised.
Oh, yeah. I think it's really important, and that's a great resource for people now as well. This issue, Donal, it's growing all the time. As I said, it's targeting everybody. And the more that's done across the board from ourselves, from the likes of the BBFI, from the banks, from the social media companies, we all need to act together to help this, because this is worldwide. It's growing all the time. It's impacting everybody, and everybody has to come together to do as much as possible to try and stop this.
Now, what the central bank has done this week is launched what you're calling the SAFE test, a four-step process: stop, assess, fact check, and expose and report. An important timetable and an important list for people to bear in mind when looking at potential scams.
Very much so, Donal. I think it's those four steps, as you mentioned, really important. That stop thing, it is just take your time. Stop, think about it. Simple things like when somebody rings you out of the blue, how did they get my number? Why are they ringing me? What are they offering? Where did they get my information from? It's just stop and think about it. You get a call, and you go, oh, you're entering, and this happens a lot as well, Donal. We see people where they go online and they're looking for loans, as I mentioned, they're looking for investments. You're searching for the best investment rates in Ireland, and you enter your details on a website and you get a phone call back. And, they say, oh, it's Mark Ford here from, Bank of Ireland or AIB or PTSB or Citibank. You don't know who that person is. You haven't dealt with them before. So just take your time, think about it. You can verify the information then. So that's where you assess what's happening. What are you being offered? Does it make sense? Has it come out of the blue? More than likely, if it's out of the blue, it's a scam, and you should just cut all correspondence and interaction with the individuals that have got in contact with you. Fact check it. As I said, ring back. Go online, go to the actual legitimate firm's website, get their number, ring them, find out if that person works for them, even ask to talk to them again, through the number you've rang rather than them contacting you to make sure you're dealing with the right person. On our central bank website, we've got registers. There's information there that gives you details about legitimate firms. You can check that. We have a phone number there as well to contact Donal. If you're ever in doubt, contact. The other thing I'd say to people, you know, always talk to, you know, we recommend you get financial advice, but I'm also conscious that sometimes financial advice can cost money, okay? So what I'd say in that situation, if you don't have the money to pay for financial advice, definitely talk to somebody. Talk to a family member. Talk to a friend, a trusted friend. Somebody that you know that might be in the industry. Ask them and check the information with them. So that's where you're fact-checking, you're assessing it. You're taking your time before you make any decisions. See, the fraudsters out there, they're very adept at trying to put you under pressure to make decisions quickly, tell you everything is time-bound, that you're going to miss out. Don't listen to any of that information. You take your time, assess the information, and call people and talk to people. And then if you do believe you've been a victim of a scam, contact the guards, contact the central bank. That's how we're going to help stop other people being caught by the same scams.
And the reality, too, in this day and age, is the nature of business almost lends itself to this. There was a time if you had banking to be done, you dropped into your local branch, you knew Mary, the bank manager, you knew John, who was working, the teller who was behind the counter, and you went in and you had a chat and, you know, you asked after their mother and you did your business and you went home. Now it's call centres, it's online, it's cold, there's a personal touch gone, and the reality of things is that as long as we're in this sort of call centre space, we're open to potential scams like this. And I suppose, really and truly, we're in the era where now, instead of wondering is it a scam, it's almost if you get an unsolicited message purporting to come from your bank, presume it's a scam and work backwards from there.
Exactly. You're very much right. Like, I'd start in this position where it's a scam. I need to prove that it's not a scam, you know? So I think that's a very good helpful tip for people. Start with the fact that you think it's a scam and go work backwards from there. But you're right, you know, having phones and technology is great, but it means everything's at now at the tip of your fingers. There's nobody to talk to. Like, if I was making big investments, you know, and big life decisions around my pension pot and what am I doing with it, I'm still very old school, Donal. I like to talk to somebody. I like to see somebody, the whites of their eyes. I need to meet somebody. So where possible, I would be saying that to people as well, you know. You know, over emails, you know, you need to be talking to people, you need to see people. Despite the fact that that's the way things are going, I think you need to take your time and try that as much as possible.
And just to repeat, the safe test, stop, think and ask yourself challenging questions about what you're being offered. Number two is assess, make sure the firm is genuine. Number three is fact check, seek advice to ensure the product or service is legitimate. And then number four is expose and report. If you have any concerns, contact the central bank. Mark Ford, Head of Function over Unauthorised Providers Unit within the central bank. Mark, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Donal, thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Mark there speaking to us from the central bank. I actually came across one this morning that I'd never heard of. Funnily, I was looking. I would be a member of a few online sort of groups on Facebook linked with travel and one particular sort of travel provider in particular, and a company I've used for many years and have enjoyed many holidays with. And there was a forum, and a person came on the forum and said, "It's an absolute disgrace the way I'm being treated. I had a query and I rang them and they told me I needed to pay more port charges and taxes." And a number of people immediately came back and went, "Hang on a tick, that doesn't make sense. Did you ring the number that the company provided you on your booking forms and invoices, or did you Google it?" The person came back and said, "I Googled it." It now transpires that one of the things that's appearing on Google, and this is something I hadn't heard of before, and this is something I'm certainly putting into my armoury, they looked up the number for a company that we'll call, for the sake of argument, Donal Kavanagh Travel. And they'll Google Donal Kavanagh Travel Queries, and a number will come up, and it'll say, "Donal Kavanagh Travel Queries, enjoy travelling with Donal Kavanagh, all your queries here, any issues, give a ring." The person saw it, assumed it was genuine, because we're now in a situation where if you go into Google, most search engines, you go into a search engine, you almost know now the first page is all going to be sponsored ads. I mean, you know, you go searching for a hotel, and I made this mistake once, I'll never make it again. You go searching for a hotel and you'll get a web address it'll be something like booking.hotelofyourchoice.splodgesplodge.com. what you're actually getting is the address of a booking company that will offer you that hotel, but it's not the hotel's own website. And likewise, this number put them through, not to the company that they wanted to ask the question of, but put them through to some scammers who basically said, oh, the problem here is you need to pay more taxes. Here's the number. Send us the money and that'll solve your problem. And they, now, thankfully, they did not send the money. They didn't get caught. But I'd never heard of that one before. So even be careful now when you're on a search engine, Google or whichever, that if you're looking to contact a company, make sure it is the company that you're contacting, because that's what actually happened. The person thought they were speaking to a representative of the company. They weren't. They were speaking to a scammer. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh on the programme with you this morning. Going to go to our next guest in just a moment, speaking about an element of the general election result. But just give us one moment for that. Before we go any further, I did promise you a second competition on the programme today. With thanks to the Silver Tassie Hotel and Seascape Spa, we're giving you the chance to win their Pamper Me Please package. It's worth €130. This 2.5 year... 2.5 year, 2.5 hour spa package. It includes an aromatic steam session and cocoon room. Is that cocoon, I wonder? It possibly isn't. I don't know if cocoon is a thing, but I suspect it might be cocoon. A hot towel foot and back cleanse, a stress-relieving back massage, a Yonka facial with face and scalp massage, a pressure point foot massage, and a snooze room relaxation time with refreshments. And I know a lot of people that could do with that. Quite a few of us not too far away from here, actually. To be in with a chance of winning this fantastic prize on Friday, simply answer this question. Which Christmas song mentions a one-horse open sleigh? Is it A, Jingle Bells, or B, White Christmas? Please text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 086 60 25 000. Which Christmas song mentions a one-horse open sleigh? Is it Jingle Bells or White Christmas? Please WhatsApp your name, address and answer to 086 60 25 000. Now, the results of the general election, and they have thrown a 172, 173 TDs. And we're joined on the line by Katie Deegan, who's Communications Director with Women for Election. Katie, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. We've spoken before, Katie, about the importance of getting more women into Dáil Éireann. A lot of discussion over the past number of months about gender quotas and the fact that the main parties were required to have 40% of their candidates women. Looking now, as of this morning, earlier this week, 39 women had been elected when this briefing note was written. It's I think it's in and around about the 44 mark now.
44,
it is 44. Now, these figures you believe are positive, but given that there's over 170 TDs, more is needed to be done here.
Yeah, so 44 women have been elected across constituencies in Ireland, which amounts to about 25% of all of our TDs. Because of the additional seats, it is a net gain of about 7 women compared to the outgoing Dáil. So it's a small percentage increase up from 23%.
In terms of the gender quota regulation that's come in, it's been the topic of a lot of conversation. In your view, has it worked?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, the gender quotas are there to put candidates on a ballot paper. This year in the locals and in the general election, we had a record-breaking number of women running in both of those elections. We had 246 women running for seats across the country, which is brilliant. And that's what a gender quota is there to do. But I suppose the thing with gender quotas is that it's not a silver bullet. It's not there to solve the gender imbalance of our democracy in itself. It is a starting block. It's a blunt instrument. And, you know, we don't always like what gender quotas are. Like, we don't like that we have to have them, but we like what they do. And what they do is they give the electorate a hell of a lot more choice in the candidates that they can choose from.
Now, I want to make it absolutely clear that my next question is not based on any one particular person. And I say that here for a reason. It is not based on one person. This question is not based on one constituency. This question is not based on one party. And I'm saying that clearly now out loud up front here in Donegal. But there has been a suggestion that in some cases, what you basically got were parties chose the two men they wanted to run, and then they picked a third woman who was basically there to satisfy the gender quota, and they may as well have had a poster that said, vote number one, token woman. Was that an issue across the country?
Well, first and foremost, I think no woman is a token candidate.
Absolutely not. I don't believe so. But are there some parties effectively putting in a third candidate who is a woman, not because they believe that candidate has a prospect of election, not because they believe that's the right person to represent their constituency? They're doing so because there's a law that says they have to.
Look, I mean, at the end of the day, I think what Women for Election are going to do after this election is we're going to analyse where women ran, what length of time were they given in order to run a campaign. We know that a lot of the time women are added quite late to the ticket and that can hinder their campaign. We also know that, you know, this general election came really, really quickly after the local elections. So for a lot of women who were candidates in this general election, they weren't given the kind of, I suppose, the same amount of chance to get around their constituency as maybe sometimes their incumbent male partners. We know that, you know, quota chasing can happen in parties, and that's, you know, that's not a secret, I don't think. But I would say that every single woman who put their name forward definitely did with the intention of thinking that they were going to represent their communities really, really well. And the other thing as well is that, you know, we need to have a look at the structure. So gender quotas are great to get the women onto the ballot paper, but we need to look at the structures in which our democracy kind of happens. And that goes with things like, you know, how quickly or how late we're putting women onto ballot papers, the selection processes within parties, the attitudes towards women in leadership in society in general. And all of those things have a part to play. And I think that that's a really important analysis for Women for Election, especially going forward into the next general election.
And in terms of the barriers, and there are many barriers there, you know, barriers that recognise, for instance, the reality that in many cases women are taking responsibility for childcare. Questions were raised with me over the course of the weekend. I was speaking to one woman who is involved in politics who had a child with her, and saying she felt that she didn't feel welcome in the count centre with her child. And she said, well, I mean, how are they supposed to get more women in when you don't feel welcome when you turn up in what is the absolute expression of democracy?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like, look, childcare is one of those things that we know has been kind of a red hot topic during this general election anyway, and the expense of it and so on. And I think what's really important is that we look at, again, those structures that keep women out of politics. And one of those things is what would be really beneficial, I think, to male and female candidates who are running in general elections is that maybe additional childcare should be considered some sort of an election cost, whether that's a percentage of it or whatever the case may be. And I think that that's really important because we know that it's an incredibly expensive thing to do. We know that you need all hands on deck when you're running an election. And that goes from spouses' help to parents' help to friends and family, you know. So it is really difficult when you have kind of smallies and, you know, you don't really know what you're going to be doing with them. And we don't want, you know, people to have that as a barrier to entering our democracy. And, you know, it's really important that working mams, working dads, single parents, all of the lived experience that comes with those things are represented in our DAW, because ultimately that lived experience makes for better decision making within within the Irish democracy.
If you look at the very top of Irish politics at the moment, it looks reasonably good. We have three women who are party leaders. We have a woman is the deputy leader of one of the parties which has been in government and may very well be in the next government. And she replaced a woman who was deputy leader before her. So from that point of view, when you look at your party leaders, when you look at your top party structures, it's reasonable. I mean, you know, we have been speaking a long time that there is a woman who very much is in with the prospect of being Taoiseach, perhaps not this time, maybe the next time. Who knows what's going to happen? It's not off the table yet. So at the very top, we seem to have it. We've got strong women. We've got Mary Lou. We've got Ivana Bacik. We've got Holly Cairns. Holly Cairns indeed had a baby on the day of the election, and it didn't, you know, it seems to have not been an issue, apart from some trolls online, and their views aren't even worth considering as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, but by and large, you know, it's that's fine. The problem appears to be at ground level. The problem appears to be getting the candidates, and then once you have the candidates, actually getting people to vote for them.
Yeah, and look, I think it's twofold. So I think we have really amazing women like that are running in leadership positions across the country and that are, you know, at cabinet level or are leaders of political parties. But I suppose what it does do is when there is a small number of women who are very high profile, it almost kind of masks the problem because, you know, you might see Holly, Mary Lou, Ivana out and doing their thing, leading their party. And you think, oh, but I see women on my television screen all the time, so Irish politics doesn't have a gender problem. When actually what the reality is that we're 104th in the world for gender equality in national politics. We have never had a woman Taoiseach. We've never had a woman Minister for Finance. We've never had a woman Minister for Foreign Affairs. We elected the first ever cabinet minister in Europe, which was Countess Markovic. And then it took us another 60 years to do so. So I think, you know, when you kind of lay it out like that, I think people are a bit surprised and they go, oh, gosh, I actually didn't realise that this was such a deep rooted problem. And I suppose what Women for Election are trying to do is that we don't want you to be gender biased in a way that you think, oh, well, women can't be in leader positions. We want you to be gender conscious. We want you to go into the ballot paper and we want you to look at the women who align with your political views. You know, you agree with their policy and so on. And you look and you say, well, does X party have a man and a woman running? If so, I'll give the woman the higher preference so that I'm doing my part in order to address the gender imbalance. And I think that that's only the real way that we can actually move this issue on, because ultimately we can do whatever we can to support candidates. And there's so much that we can do there, but at the end of the day it is about what happens in the ballot box. That's what makes the real change. And in the general elections coming forward, we would hope to see that this issue would not only continue to get better like it has done this, but it would be a little bit quicker, because like I'm a woman in my 20s, like I don't want to be waiting another 40 years to see gender parity in my cabinet or in my doll and my shannon. So I think that it's just really key that, you know, voters are conscious of this issue when they're going in to cast their ballot.
Kitty Deegan, it's a fascinating discussion. It's one we're going to have into the future. And I look forward to seeing the analysis of the result and then how things go of women that are in politics, and a lot more talk to be had here. For the moment, Kitty, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks very much.
Okay, no, thank you. We're now going to leave Zoom and we are going to go to the phone, because we're joined on line one by Anne Mooney, who is a Southern correspondent with the Irish Sun newspaper. Anne, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
Anne, New Ross in County Wexford. I presume you're there, or if you're not actually there, obviously you're in very close contact with people who are. That's a really distressing, horrific story that's been unfolding there since Sunday night.
Sorry, just a second. Sorry. Sorry, somebody came in.
The story that's unfolding in New Ross since Sunday night is a really horrific one.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and to think that an eight-year-old child who was trying to save her mother was stabbed and died as a result of the wounds that were inflicted on her has left the whole community, not only in Wexford, in New Ross town, but throughout the whole country in total shock. This was an incident that happened in the family home. The little girl, Malika Al-Khadib, was in her bed when she heard a commotion downstairs and went down to see what was happening to discover that her mum was being attacked and had suffered a knife wound, which was non-fatal. She intervened and in the process was actually killed after suffering a number of stab wounds herself. Her mum managed to get out of the house and ran to neighbours who contacted the emergency services, and the Gardaí and paramedics arrived at the scene, where the paramedics attempted to stabilise her, and then they rushed her to Waterford University Hospital, where she was pronounced dead about an hour afterwards. That was at 12:45 a.m. Yesterday morning. The alarm was raised at 12:45, so, you know, within an hour all of this happened. Gardaí obviously have launched a major investigation, but they said that they are following a definite line of inquiry and aren't looking for anyone in connection with it, as they believe that they know who the perpetrator was.
As we understand that a man who was at the scene is also in University Hospital Waterford with injuries yes. believed to have been self-inflicted, under armed guard at present, and as you say, Gardaí not looking for anybody else in connection with this. So yes. from the point yes. of view of and, the Gardaí investigation.
Her mum is also in hospital yeah. being treated for wounds.
Yeah, so from the point of Gardaí investigation, there are no appeals out as such at the moment. The local school, the school to which she went, they've obviously had to put in some measures now to look after both children and teachers in that school who'll be very distressed at this
That's
news.
That's right. Yes, I spoke to Councillor Michael Sheehan. He's a member of Wexford County Council, who actually grew up in the William Street area. And he spoke about knowing the family and that they were involved in the community. And he said that this was an area where it's a multi-generational population with all the kindness and generosity that brings, and that the people living there would be there to help and support the family. He also said it was a very difficult time for the girls' teachers and classmates to have to deal with this, particularly, you know, as it was so unexpected, as I suppose. Obviously, it was unexpected. But yesterday, the Malika attended the Educate Together school in New Ross, and her school, the principal, through the principal, issued a statement on their website in which they spoke about the terrible tragedy for everyone, the family, the children, the school and the community. And the school has implemented a critical incident management plan and are getting support from the National Education Psychological Service. Members of that service were actually with in the school all day, supporting and advising teachers on how they should assist students. And obviously the whole student community there is going to be affected. But particularly the 8-year-olds who were in the same class as Malika and who were friends with her are going to have a particularly difficult time trying to process this and trying to, I suppose, answer the question, why did this happen?
And thank you very much indeed for speaking to us. As we say, a horrific story that's unfolding, and we hope that all involved in the school and that can get over this shock, and we will be watching obviously how that process progresses over the coming days and weeks. But for now, Anne Mooney, thank you very much indeed.